Let's give them something to talk about. I see the energy running out. I got a planet to run around. Okay, okay. You ain't do nothing but run your mouth. No, I don't want to be humble.
Yeah, dude, that was smooth. That was good.
PR. Best one.
Hey, so welcome, Mather. Glad to have you here.
Thanks. Glad to be here. This is exciting.
Yeah. It's for those who don't know, we've known Mather for almost 10 years now.
10 years now.
It's actually kind of cool that this is like almost a 10-year anniversary.
It kind of is.
Well, yeah. It is a 10-year anniversary of our team, the National Pro Grid League team, the San Francisco Fire, because we got started in 2014.
That's right.
Yep. And we were really close. No, our first match was in August of 2014 was our first match we had. Yep. But we're very close to that date, which is really kind of cool.
Crazy. Crazy it is.
And we would have had a reunion with everybody that was involved, but everybody's too bitter.
There's some bitterness.
We'll work on a 20-year reunion. But then we'll all have forgotten. Ah, oh, fuck it.
Bring it back.
Yeah, but I'm super stoked to have you on, and we're doing this for a couple of reasons. One, Jamie and I have talked about doing this for a while
now,
because grid comes up here and there in conversations, especially with CrossFitters. Mm-hmm. and you guys at the United Grid League now are starting to really gain interest in and amongst the community. Like, it's come, you know, we're all the way over here in California. We're starting to see tons of content coming from your direction, interest from our athletes and our community about what it is, what's this all about. And, you know, I find myself every once in a while, well, let me tell you about, we help start that sport. I get all defensive. These guys, yeah, they're good, but let me tell you about how we got started. And so it's fun. So we've been wanting to do something like this. We've also, Jamie knows, I tell him every once in a while, hey, maybe we should and think about putting something together, because it was, I'm going to start this podcast and end it the same way. It was so much fucking fun.
Yes.
There was all
of it too.
Yeah. All of it,
from the pros to the amateur stuff that we were doing back in the day when there was like that in between year, it was so much fun.
Yeah, it was fun. The events were fun. The athlete relationships were fun, and I think every athlete that participated in, if you went back and talked to them about it, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, that was really cool."
Yeah, yeah. There's so few things you do in life that you'll just always remember and cherish. You know what I mean? And I feel like there's very few people from that experience that don't really, really cherish at least portions of it. Of course, like you said, there are some bitterness components to it, but anything worth doing has challenge and emotion associated with it. So,
Well said.
Yeah. That's so true too. Cause like even throughout the CrossFit, the years of the last decade, running into, you know, past teammates or past competitors from those days in at the CrossFit Games or at local competitions, it's like, hey, it's like,
oh yeah, we have our,
such a good throwback.
Dude, we have a secret handshake.
Yeah. We know.
We know. And we're like, mm-hmm.
Yep. Grid speed. Let's do it. Yeah.
So for those who don't know, Mather was part of the original Grid League, which was the National Pro Grid League. And we'll talk about that, the original National Pro Grid League. I think it's important for people to understand that this didn't start like on a whim. There was a tremendous amount of thought and a massive investment that was put into it to try and truly make it a professional sport. It wasn't trying to sensationalize it or try to get it on TV and collect. It was truly an effort to try and create a new American sport. Tony Budding, who was a former media director of CrossFit, really had a big vision for it. A lot of reasons why it didn't work out. But what's really cool is that one of the team founders, Mather Wiswell and his sister, Ruby, who owned the Miami Surge, after the completion of the National Pro Grid League, kept it going. And they kept it going in an amateur format, something that they started while you had the pro team, right?
Barely, but yes, the last year of the pro team was when we held our first technical event. It looked nothing like it does now. But yeah, that was the technical start of it for sure.
Was that right after Provo or like during that time? Like
it's actually during, we were planning the event in Provo and held it directly after Provo, I believe.
So just to give just to give people points of references, Jamie, be careful. Sorry. Provo means something to us. It means nothing to anybody that's listening to this podcast or may listen to this podcast. Provo, Utah was the last season of the Grid League in 2016. And what was interesting about that, it was an attempt that something that should have been done sooner, we realized. Because what it allowed, they essentially came together for 3 weeks in Provo, Utah at a,
it's like a month.
Yeah. Was it a month?
It was a month long.
At a convention center there to essentially run and film the entire season.
Yeah.
Giving the league tremendous cost savings as they didn't have to move media equipment or gym equipment all around the country to different venues, set up in different venues. The whole thing, you could leave the venue set up. Mm-hmm. And then record the entire season, much like they do with American Ninja Warrior, which does it, which, you know, for those that don't understand what an amazing event American Ninja Warrior is, highly watched. It's, you know, for many, many years in the top in Nielsen ratings. What's cool about them is that their production costs are exceptionally low because they do it outdoors. They don't have to rent a venue. They're doing it outdoors on an empty lot in Las Vegas. They have everything, all their equipment stored there. They do the same thing. They run their season very quickly. I'm not sure what their season length is. I think it's something like 3 weeks, but they're doing, you know, they're operating every other night kind of thing, or maybe even every night during that
period. So everybody's there the whole time.
Everybody's there
Was for us.
Yep. And they and they actually do the stages there as well, which is really with some of the stages there as well. But what's cool about it is because it's outdoors, they wait until nighttime when it's dark, which gives them the feeling of being indoors with the lighting.
Fun vibe for the TV.
It's just the whole thing's brilliantly done at an exceptionally low cost. And the Grid League, the National Pro Grid League, tried to mimic that with their events in Provo, Utah. And unfortunately, essentially ran out of money and couldn't continue on. Didn't have the TV contracts, didn't have the support. And we could talk about that. But you started your, what was then the Florida Grid League, right?
Correct. Yeah, it was originally meant to support, like the original vision of it was going to support the Miami Surge through kind of regional engagement better educate the sport, find athletes, things like that. And then, of course, when the NPGL went down, it evolved into something different, which is essentially the pinnacle of the sport, but in a very, very different model.
And it was the Florida Grid League, a self-funded league, meaning it was it could operate without extra cost input?
Yes, completely bootstrapped.
Wow.
Yep, the whole way.
And let's take a step back and have people understand, because we're going to get, you know, a lot of California listeners understand what Grid is. And then we'll go from there. I'll just kind of interject, because I could get into the history of it really in deep detail, but I'm not sure everybody wants to hear that. But it was started in it. I'll give a brief intro, and then we can let's talk about how the matches are set up in the field to set up. Jamie's got a picture of the grid. End of 2013, toting budding, after coming off a very successful international team competition in Berlin. It was a sold out event.
The Invitational, correct?
Yeah, the Invitational. Yeah. It was the team Invitational. Filled up and sold out an arena within like 3 hours. The broadcast of it itself, like the recordings they did it for like YouTube, was just, it was awesome, and people were in awe and were awestruck by it. And I remember him telling us about being in the TV trailer and just looking at the people watching it who have no experience with CrossFit or ever, just were looking at just going, what the hell, this is amazing. He formulated an idea then that, you know, hey, let's create a team sport based on that Invitational, CrossFit Invitational, Team Invitational, International Team Invitational, much like we've seen recently. and where strategies involved and people can see who's winning and losing, those types of things. So they, so from there he asked and pitched it to CrossFit, to Greg Glassman. It was, and was turned down. It's not, so Greg was not in support of it, you know, investing in any more competition events.
Competition stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And so he basically wrote a Jerry Maguire email, which in hindsight, that probably wasn't the best idea. But, you know, again, it's, you know, it's, he was pissed. And so he basically left to start this league, got some funding from his family, a fairly substantial amount of money from his family, and then attempted to recruit some of the key individuals from CrossFit. Some of them came, many of them did not. And it was, that was perceived, in my opinion, as a threat to CrossFit by CrossFit. In other words, it was perceived as a competitive threat. Mm-hmm. That started the whole process of kind of competing with CrossFit. He left. He reached out to me at that time and said, hey, what do you think about this idea? I was, you know, coming out the CrossFit Games myself as a master's athlete. Diablo was crushing in competitions. Competition was like, we were all about it. So like, this is awesome. More team events. We love team. And so I went and met with him, and then we helped, I helped him build the website, which was the National Pro Fitness League.
The NPFL. Yeah.
The NPFL.
Where we had the original combine and draft and.
He hated the word fitness. He hated the word fitness.
What was it?
In what's that?
What do you mean he hated fitness?
Tony hated the word fitness in the describing the
sport. Oh, yeah. In the label. In the title.
Yeah. He hated the word fitness. So he, but that wasn't why he changed. It was one of the reasons why he changed. But the other reason was his attorneys that had helped him set up the rule book and the league itself, the league structure with the contracts for the athletes. This is not just a,
it was deep.
This is not an event. This is a very complex, like maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars were spent on legal fees to establish this, right?
Yeah.
And so they advised him, hey, look, the logo itself, and if you show the National Pro Grid League label, let me bring back up that banner, Jamie. It was just a,
which banner?
The banner that we just used.
Oh, the banner.
Yeah.
Stand by. I'm staging our other stuff.
So if you look at the banner that's that we have, you see the MPGL. That was MPFL.
That's right.
And it looked a lot like, it looked a lot like the NFL's logo. And so the NFL logo, so they, the attorneys advised, look, you need to change the name. So he, so what did Tony do? He contracted a marketing firm in San Francisco. Those guys were great. And they came up with the term grid. Mm-hmm. What's that? What are you showing?
MPFL.
Oh, you got an MPFL logo. Yeah, that's what I mean.
This is from the finalists.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, MPFL. Yeah. Wow. That's a collector's item.
A little throwback for you.
So they changed it from the National Pro Fitness League to grid. And because we were playing on a grid. Mm-hmm. And what's cool about the grid logo, put that banner back up again, if most people don't understand this. And you don't use this grid logo?
No, we haven't. We probably should, honestly, but we haven't.
It's a sick logo, too.
Well, it's a sick logo because it's, what is it, an anagram? Is that what they call it?
I think so.
When you flip it upside down.
Yeah, so you flip it upside down, and it says the same thing. And so, you know, there's some, you know, hey, okay, yeah, you're going out, right? And then you can substitute, which means you can go back and substitute. And then he created rules for the sport. And, you know, he just, I swear I wasn't going to get too deep on this. Sorry, Mather.
It's all good. I enjoy revisiting
this. So this book, he recommended I read this book. And anybody that's in professional sports, I think Dave Castro's read this book as well. Dave knows this book, Sports Illusion, Sports Reality, Leonard Coppett. And it's basically in it, it outlines like how you built, how professional sports were built and came and basically came into popularity. But there were seven components that Tony was really adamant about that the sport had to have. Comprehensibility. So people, and all that means is people need to look at it and understand what they're doing. Mm-hmm. The, and the more comprehensible it is, the more likely people are to kind of become engaged with it quickly. And that was what was really cool about the grid format, say, versus CrossFit. And you walk into CrossFit, although Dave has now said this many times, I want people to walk in and see, look at it and see who's winning and mm-hmm. leave, come back and be able to tell again. continuity. In other words, it needs to be the same from week to week. So what Tony created, one, he created the grid. So you basically move down the grid as you accomplish things. And then the first person to the end of the grid, two teams going against each other wins. So it's simple as that. Continuity means every week you can experience the same thing.
Yeah.
And so he created
consistency between races, race formats.
So there was 9 races.
11.
Oh, that's 11 races in a match. Sorry. Okay, look. I was not a coach, first of all.
Shit.
I help with the overall stuff. and jump in anytime, Mather. Tell me how long I am. But what's cool is race one was race one. Like, and it was a certain format. Jamie, Mather, tell me, what are some of the races 1 through 11 that people like, so that people can understand what we mean by that?
Do you want to go, Mather?
Yeah. So, I mean, the main thing in consistency is the rules around how the races are run and like what's a legal move and what's not are consistent from match to match.
Yes.
And that really creates like a very, you know, continuous experience, like that book says. And
yes.
We have maintained all of the races that existed, except we did make a couple of changes, which we could talk about. But
what number is the ladder?
11. It was 7, right?
I believe it was 7. Yes.
Yeah.
It's actually 6 race for 7. Us.
It's okay. Race 6 for you guys. So the 7th race was always a ladder. There's some sort of ladder, a barbell ladder that. And it could even be dumbbell ladder. It gets progressively harder as you move down the quadrants.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that just that's one of the funnest events there is. And so it continuity from so everybody knows, right? It you know, that was watching grid. Hey, race 7 is the ladder, you know, and that made it fun as hell. It's got to be readable, or in other words, people need to know the score. Well, one thing that Tony invested in, remember the technology they invested in was the scoreboard. And
pull up a picture of that.
Yeah. And they had a scoreboard up. So when you're sitting in the arena, you could watch the athletes and tell where they were on the grid, but you could also see the team scoreboard and the number of reps they were doing. And it was like a bar chart. And it was so badass. So you see that. Can you zoom in on this?
Let me see if I can.
Jamie's not late. Yeah. There you go, dude. Right on. Look at you.
Winning.
All right. So right at the top, so you see the grid and then you see the grid logo in the middle. This was a beautiful one. And by the way, that's an Aleco rig.
Amazing piece of equipment.
Amazing piece of equipment designed for grid and shipped out to us. But there's that bar chart and that bar chart basically shows it's a 0-0 score, but that's counting the reps. So the reps of each team, if they're equal, right, it stays, it looks like that, but as they add points, or in this case, this is a ladder, it shows you where they are. And you watch, and the fans would go nuts.
So fun.
Watching that stupid bar chart. And when you see that bar chart like cross over, you look it up, look it down, they look up, look it down, look up, look it down. It was so freaking exciting. So readability, coherence, and then, here's number 5 is hazard. And the sport itself, and you think about football, baseball, there's a little bit of hazard in all of these sports, even soccer, right? There's a little bit of danger, a little bit of hazard.
Yeah.
And that keeps fans engaged as well. And of course, grid has that, you know, with some of these events. Low cost, we didn't do well on that one.
Big right out of the gate.
Holy crap. We had eyes way bigger than our stomach. A vicarious experience, violence, triumph, second guessing, and patriotism. And we did have some team. What was really cool that happened here, and why I have such long lasting relationships with people, like Mather, like Dusty Highland, LA Rain, and like Justin Kotler at the Brawlers, and Josh Plosker at the Boston Iron, is that there was this patriotism with our teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we were passionate about, you know, we would talk shit.
Oh, so fun.
About Kotler and the Brawlers. It was kind of almost heated, but it was
rivalry
really
action.
Good friendships developed as a result of that. It was so freaking cool. And when there was an upset, it was so awesome. when someone beat, if someone beat the powerhouse team or even beat them on a race that they always win.
Yeah.
It just was outstanding. And then the other thing that happened that was really cool, and then let's get into this a little bit, is there were some heroes that were made in the sport. There were some athletes that became kind of iconic because of their performances in a particular event.
Specialties.
Yeah. Sam Dancer diving across the finish line at the event at Berkeley, the Haas Pavilion, in our event to win the event. Someone doing a huge lift in the fourth quadrant.
Mm-hmm. Or hitting that touch and go at that final bar and the ladder.
Yeah.
Or not the ladder, the race 11.
Yeah, race 11. And so race 11, this was a cool one because race 11 had a combination of gymnastics, right? And then the last
quadrant. Had all kinds of stuff.
The last quadrant was always, wasn't the last quadrant always?
Generally like a really heavy item.
Generally really heavy item. And you would see this fast and furious effort going on through the first three quadrants in the last race. And a lot of matches came down to that last race. Mm-hmm. And then, but the last event of the last race was oftentimes a heavy clean and jerk or a double clean and jerk, something like that, heavy snatch. And the athlete, what you would think is, you know, in this fast and furious, the gymnastics, muscle ups, everything else, that the last athlete would come just barreling down that quadrant to do that lift. And oftentimes it was a slow jog, sometimes almost a walk up to the bar as they're trying to prepare themselves to go from lifting fucking nothing to cleaning and jerking. Like, I forget some of those numbers, more than 315.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
and like you're like, walking up and you got Danny Nichols sprinting up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't slow down.
There you go. Right. So there's a hero, right? Danny Nichols would come and we would send our athlete would get to the barbell first of all the other stuff, hit one rep.
Yeah.
And then, you know, have to take a step back, go, ooh. And Danny Nichols comes up and freaking, you know, touch and goes it and wins the race because
they or you're down and then you have somebody like Eric Cardona come in and rip out some gymnastics stuff and like get us five reps ahead out of nowhere.
Yeah.
There was just so exciting stuff.
There was some really exciting stuff and the crowd got it and understood it and was passionate. Tell me now. So just real quick, we had on our team when we first started. I don't know how many total athletes we had, but each race was
it eight men, eight women?
Was it eight and eight to start when we started?
Five and five.
Okay. But one had to be a masters, correct? Yeah.
So the total team or within a given race? Cause the total team I think was always 18 if I remember.
Yeah. Total eight. Yeah. It was
eight and eight, but then you would start the five and five then, right? Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you would start five men and five women. Mm-hmm. Is when we say five and five and four and four, it's five men, five women. And but each race would only have
two
or four,
depending on two, because there was also like the
There was four for the mirror.
Oh yeah.
Right. So four athletes would be out there for the mirror, two men, two women.
Well, you'd have six in the mirror.
Six in the mirror. That's right, because two people carrying the bar.
Yep.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So let me just and you guys help me here.
But you keep referring to quadrants. Do you want to talk about the grid really quick, just to kind of lay out the floor plan?
Yeah, we do that real quick.
Yeah.
Let me pull up that. So the mirror race was essentially the barbell can't touch the ground. Once it leaves the floor, it can't touch the ground. If it touches the ground, all athletes have to run back to the starting point, touch the ground behind the line, then come back out and re-go. And there's a certain number of reps. So for example, a shoulder overhead, you can put that piece up, I'll talk. So there's the four quadrants, right? So you come out and then there's a certain number of reps in each lane, right? So 10, and I think in the shoulder overhead, it was like 10, 10, 10, 10, 10,
10, 10, yeah.
And it was a heavy weight for men and women. And they had to do it at the same time. Like the two women couldn't get ahead of the men.
Yeah.
Or the one woman.
You could finish within the quadrant, but you could move on without.
The athlete that's doing the shoulder to overhead couldn't, they had to mirror each other, right, at the same time. What was cool was you had two athletes holding the bar.
As
human racks, moving from quadrant to quadrant. So they'd let the athlete do it. Then they would do the 10 reps. 10 reps get done. And then they move to the next quadrant, and they go again. The athletes could swap out So in which they would, right? Because it was strategically, you want to move the bar, then swap the athlete out and let the fresh athlete that was holding the bar go. And you just get, and if the bar dropped at any point, if it slipped and dropped, all four athletes had to go back, which gave a huge advantage.
All six athletes.
Yeah, all six athletes, sorry. Three and three, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so there's three men, three women on each side, sorry. But just to, and they'd move all the way down, and then they get to the fourth quadrant. These guys are all smoked, and you definitely did not want to drop that barbell in the fourth quadrant. Because if you drop the fourth quadrant, you got to go all the way back to the start, tag, and come all the way back. And that's, you know, three, four reps.
For, as a reference, too, the barbell for the overhead was like a 285, I think.
For the guys?
It was a heavy, for the men, it was a heavy bar. So you had to have some heavy specialists, some heavy hitters.
Oh, yeah. Are you guys doing what are your guys' events, or what are your guys' notable events that you guys are running in your United Grid League?
We kept all the same races. The main differences, there's actually three main differences in the race structures.
Yeah.
The first one is the ladder. We reduced the number of barbells and increased the weight generally of the like total barbell width. Cause if you remember, they used to start out with really light weights.
Yes.
And people would just kind of rip through them and throw the barbell everywhere. And so we kind of eliminated that, got a little heavier from the get-go and had four and four instead of, so there's four men bars and four women bars. So that's one difference. The next difference is we combine the echoes. One of the consistent pieces of feedback that we got was that four echoes in a row was just too many of the same thing back to back to back. So we combined men and women together in the echoes, and in the strength elements, they share the same strength implement. It's just there's a variation on what the element is. So, for example, females will deadlift the bar to accumulate reps, and guys will clean it.
Oh, okay. So not having to have multiple pieces of equipment out there then.
Yeah, so and they share equipment, which is completely unique.
That's
a great
idea. Yeah, that's a huge win. Yeah.
So the Echo was, I think, races 5 and 6.
It was 3, 4, 5, and 6.
3, 4, 5, and 6. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the issue, was the same thing four races in a row.
So you consolidated it down to
two
races.
Two.
Okay. Yeah.
So an Echo is basically you do the race and then you do the same race again.
It's essentially four elements, right? One element per quadrant.
Right. That's right. Okay. We kept that whole structure in the way that, you know, it's often strength, body weight, strength, that kind of general structure. We kept all of that is just combining men and women.
It was that's cool. The Echo. So now, and here's what you got to think about as a coach and why the coach is so freaking important in Grid, which is really neat, is they have to think about keeping fresh athletes out there the whole time. So now you got a team of, you know, and when we had Grid, it was, you know, a team of what we say 18 athletes, and you got a
but you can only start 10 starting athletes.
That's right. So you got a team of 10 athletes, and you got to cycle those athletes in and out so that you get the freshest athletes. What was really cool, I do remember with the Echo races, is a team would win, dominate one Echo, and then lose the next one.
Yeah, because they're reusing that athlete for the 30 muscle ups or something like that.
Yeah,
that still happens all the time. Echoes flip all the time, and
yeah, that's cool.
It's just really wild when that happens. Like, and you're looking at just going, wait a minute, and that's part of the strategy, and then the part of the endurance. That's cool.
Yeah, and good race design is for that. Like, you're trying to achieve where you have to make changes, or you if you try again with your best athletes, because every team has somebody that's going to be the best at a certain element. So if you take the risk and try again and they mess up, that's it. It's over. Or you switch it out for somebody that's not quite as good, then, you know, that has a different outcome than the first one. And therefore, you know, and of course, as with any Grid race, one mistake can mess every piece of your strategy up and completely flip what the race outcome is. So all of that combined means that that Echo does flip quite often.
We would score the races. So a win was worth 1 point, right? Or was it
two points?
Okay. Win was 2 points.
Completion was one.
Completion of the event and losing is 1 point. And then losing and not completing is zero.
Do you guys still follow that same format?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the secrets to that, the scoring structure. And Tony had great vision for that, for sure.
Yeah, that worked. They added the zero feature I think that was added. That was a late ad. That was after the initial tests in Florida. Was that where our draft was? He added that after the fact.
Yeah, and that, I remember him getting resistance for that. But
yes, so I
absolutely critical to, you know, the races keeping tension even when one wins, and even the scoring overall, it just it equates to a much better product for sure.
Did it put on like a timer too? Like you had X amount of time to finish it.
Yeah.
Yes, there. That was the shot clock that came later on.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
We would love to do that. We don't have the technology for it, but we do have time caps. And then we did add one race. We added one new race, and it's called the Ringer Point race. And essentially, the team picks. So one of the big issues with the original version of Grid in our mind that we always talked about was that there's no defense and there's no interaction between the teams. So it's like, why does it even matter that you're playing a specific team overall? You could just, you know, have everybody run the race and then compare times. And we wanted to create an opportunity for one team to be able to affect the other team's performance. And so we introduced the Ringer Point race, which is a race selected by the teams. So there's like a set list of races and each team picks one. So you're going to pick one that you think you have an advantage of over the other team, and it involves one player. So that's why it's called the Ringer Point players. So it's like your ringer for that particular race, but you can only use a player once in a season. So this gives an opportunity for teams to strategically affect one another. And then also you have to, you know, incorporate your season long planning with your roster, with that race. So that was like the only thing that we've done differently from a race perspective. But that specific race has a shot clock involved. So the way the scoring works is it's still the 2 and 1, but instead of a regular time cap, it's 20% of whatever the winning time was. So it's the shot clock reversed, or the same idea as the shot clock. We just don't have the technology to have the countdown the way that we did on the screen in the NPGL.
Okay, so the Grid League was set up essentially with team owners. You know, Tony Budding built the league, hired professional referees. I remember we were all kind of part of the rule book, crafting the rule book, and it was an extensive rule book. He created professional documents by the same law firm that actually represented the NFL. They created the contracts of the team owners that the team owners had with the league, and then they created the athlete contracts that the athletes had with the teams and everybody. The athletes were employees, and one of his visions was, look, I want to get these CrossFit athletes more money in their pocket. I want to get them paid. And so we paid them salaries to and then there were bonuses as well, but we paid them salaries to be on the teams. Jamie, by the way, was a San Francisco Fire athlete. And Jamie also, not only that, but he also helped organize and run one amateur event.
We hosted one at the training facility. It was like a local competition, tournament where we did like, I think, 5 or 6 races.
Yeah.
And that was
a lot of fun.
Oh, it was so much fun.
So the Grid League has these contracts with the owners, and the owners have contracts with the employees. It was very formal. You could tell as money was. And we went and did the events. Like we had a professional draft,
pro days, food,
the hotels, like the whole thing was just big money stuff. Yeah. Pro days where we had trial combines where the athletes came in and tried out the whole 9 hours. How does that differ from what you guys are doing in United Grid League or Florida Grid League into United Grid League?
Yeah, I mean, you've made reference a couple of times, but the overhead associated with that version was not sustainable. No. It didn't really matter what the income was. It just wasn't going to match it anytime soon. And I think there's a reason. Like, you still hear about contract issues and, you know, things about, like, are athletes paid enough in the UFC? And that's, like, one of the biggest sports in the world.
Good point.
And there's a reason for that. And it's because, you know, what you pay your staff and what you pay your athletes are the biggest levers you can pull as far as overhead goes. And of course, travel, as Craig also mentioned earlier as well. So rather than, you know, kind of get ahead of ourselves, like clearly NPGL taught us, what not to do in that regard.
Yes.
We kind of reversed it to, all right, what is the more traditional amateur version of, you know, the opportunity to make finances a part of being an athlete? Mm-hmm. And initially it was exclusively through the prize that's won for the season. We kept it all regional in Florida so that the cost to be an athlete were a lot lower. And if you're going to go compete in a local CrossFit competition, you could also go compete in grid and obviously have a much better, more organized and, you know, exciting experience that feels very different, in our opinion, better.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
As we've grown, we've figured out opportunities for players to earn by being a player in different ways, but it also directly correlates to their effort, both for the brands that end up paying them, but also in promoting the sport and their team and things like that. So players can earn more than players earned in Provo, for example.
Interesting.
But it directly correlates to the impact that they can have. So the size of their following. And then what happens is they can sell sponsors against their uniform and we'll print logos on their uniforms as part of what they can do. And we also hire them for league-wide sponsorships as well. So we'll do like campaigns through their social, we'll hire them for photo shoots, things like that. So we do have players that make substantial sums for that, but it directly correlates to the value that they create as well. And that's the big difference because, you know, if you evenly pay the entire league, the total sum of that increases dramatically. But if you're equally compensated for the value that you create, it's always sustainable because that means the value is out ahead of what's being paid, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, actually. It's merit-based system.
Right, exactly. And like even some of the smaller sports that are quote-unquote professional do the exact same thing.
Interesting.
When it comes to like, you know, some they'll have salaries for certain players, but it directly correlates to both their impact on team play, but also their promotion, their how much they affect the team awareness and in fan base, interaction, things like that. So we kind of took that approach.
Where do you guys do your events? How many do you do? How many does each team do a season?
Currently, there's 4 regular season matches and then a playoff and championship for the top teams that make it through the seeding process in the regular season.
Where do those team matches happen?
So currently, the vast majority of them are at fitness expos. Okay. We just did an event at Mr. Olympia, which is
I saw that.
Yeah,
badass.
Yeah, so that'll be our second year with them. We've got good relationships with a couple of others that continuously run events in Florida. And we've had a ton of expos reach out across the country about us coming to them because it's a no-brainer for them. It's high energy, exciting sport. You know, we draw a good crowd for that type of event. And so we have lots of opportunities as far as that goes. And it just really depends on, you know, there are downfalls to expos as well. But that currently has been what we've done for the most part.
We did one of our events at the San Jose Expo, and it was a big hit. It was outstanding.
We had a few matches there too, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we did a few matches there. And you set up a low bleacher system around the grid, and they were exciting. And then big backdrop. Mm-hmm. It's got to be one of the things that's got to be much cheaper and much more available is all of the media, the print media that you do, you know, like the banners and all that stuff. That stuff is so much cheaper these days. Even getting shirts made is so much cheaper than it used to be. The banners, man, you can get so much cheaper, but you can make a nice professional venue in it. And I think that was the other thing. We went big, like we were Madison Square Garden in the first year. And then Diablo's team, well, the San Francisco Fire ended up going over to the Haas Pavilion in Berkeley. Yeah. That venue cost us $70,000.
Yeah, did we break their floors?
Yeah, I think we did too. That was the other thing.
It's hard to facilitate people dropping hundreds of pounds.
Yeah, and we covered their basketball floor, and we swore to them we wouldn't do it, and then we ended up doing it. But that, I mean, those are the things you got to take into consideration in those big venues. And it was incredibly expensive. It was fun as hell. Mm-hmm. Again,
yes.
Fun as hell. And I remember just, you know, going out to UC Berkeley and just, you know, trying to knock on fraternity doors, trying to get people buy tickets. Or we were giving away a lot of tickets.
Yeah, I remember hanging out at one of their venues or one of their events they were doing for their students.
Yeah, just trying to get people to go, which, you know, that's what you do when you start. Yeah. So you start a professional sport. It's like you, like
door to door.
We grinded. We grinded for 3 years.
No doubt. I personally feel like that was one of the most valuable lessons that we learned from the NPGL.
Yes.
Is there's limitations to the amount of fandom you can develop instantly. Right. And we had kind of like a easy layup audience, as we thought, which was CrossFit. But even with that, there was a lot of barriers that have to be overcome to understand how the sport works and to not feel like you're cheating on CrossFit and all of these things that, you know, don't just mean that they're automatically going to become fans. So the healthy respect for the process that it takes to develop fandom is one of the things that we really learned in that experience.
Yes.
And have kind of recalibrated our expectations accordingly.
One of the things I learned through the process was the U.S. soccer, which still has teams go bankrupt to this day. Mm-hmm. The U.S. soccer, and I watched the Beckham one, by the way, his show, and he talks because he acquired the team in Miami and really went big time on that, but he leveraged obviously his fame and notoriety to help do that. But even they struggle with a lot of stuff. But what I learned was, is that the soccer in the US really wasn't profitable at all for the first 20 years. And it was, what they needed was, and what they did was support youth soccer leagues.
Yeah.
So all of these youth soccer leagues during that 20 year period of time were built and set up, and schools started playing more soccer. And all of a sudden now you've essentially created a fan base that grew up playing soccer for 15, 20 years. Now they are your fans. Yep. Finally, UFC wasn't overnight either.
You 100%. Know,
it went was near bankruptcy when Dana White bought it. Right.
Right.
And then and primarily because they couldn't get out. Most states it was illegal. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he put up the money to help fight some of these, change some of these laws so that they could actually host,
utilize the venues.
In the different states, and then set up the pay-per-view stuff and was able to break through. But it was huge investment. Now it's obviously quite successful. It's interesting you made the commentary about it, the athletes getting paid. Mm-hmm. There's a lot
of multi-billion-dollar company, and athletes still feel cheated out of what they get.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The guy that did the tattoo on my arm was a UFC fighter, a MMA fighter, and you know he said I'd make a few $100 for a few matches.
Exactly.
So, I
think there's a legitimate reason for that. Unfortunately, there's also a legitimate reason why CrossFit judges don't get paid.
Yeah.
And we do pay our referees. We have a lot lower quantity of them, but people always harp on these types of decisions. But if you look across other sports, there's a reason they're volunteer driven, because that cost is not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And you look at like marathons. Marathons are not paid staffs. They're all volunteers, like 70-80% are volunteers.
Ironman too. That's right.
So, yeah. Yeah. And there's a reason
too. Yeah, there is a reason. The one of the things that you alluded to, you glossed over, but I'll dig into it a little more, was Tony had this expectation that the CrossFit community was going to buy into this. He had this built-in fan base of, you know, millions of CrossFitters.
Functional fitness.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. And what he didn't anticipate was the blowback he would get from CrossFit enthusiasts, especially the top influencers who said, no, this is not CrossFit, and this is kind of cheating on CrossFit, and it's not the spirit of CrossFit. And then CrossFit also told their, since we were hiring the athletes as employees, CrossFit forbade their red shirts, the ones that are teaching all the certifications, from being hired by the National Pro Grid League. They perceived it as a competitive threat.
Conflict. Yeah.
I understand it. I don't agree with it, because we're on a team that had, you know, a couple of athletes that
it's completely different.
Yeah. Well, and trainers. I mean, we understand.
Yeah.
We understand the reasons.
Yeah.
But we had a number of teams. The teams that we thought were going to be great athletes ended up not signing on board because they're going to lose their standing within CrossFit. Even athletes that were games athletes felt threatened by the loss of potential relationship with CrossFit. And that made it very, very difficult. And then, as you know, a lot of the fans took sides. Some were like, okay with grid, and some were like, no way am I ever going to support that sport.
That
was an unforeseen challenge
that
we did not expect.
And I think it was a small percentage of CrossFit fans that openly accepted Grid League, like some kind of resisted a little bit. But when you have your favorite athletes out there, clearly, you know, staying away from it for, you know, who knows what reason, but whatever that reason is going to translate to the people that care about them, you know? So, and you know, that is so far in the past. And I think if you explain the logic behind it, you know, 95% of people are going to agree that they're not competitive in any way, and that it was kind of probably cost both sports a lot to create that competition. However, there are still remnants of that today. Now, the leadership.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is there?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, CrossFit, the leadership today I've had conversations with them. They're very supportive. Like, we've been open about our support of CrossFit. Like, I'm still a CrossFitter. I identify as a CrossFitter.
90% of your athletes go to CrossFit gyms, right?
Actually, the percentage has decreased significantly, but I would still say the majority. So 60-70% still are CrossFitters. And there is a very healthy coexistence. When somebody wants to play Grid League and they've never snatched before, they've never done, you know, a muscle up before, we send them to a CrossFit gym. There's just too much correlation that makes too much sense for one another. And we've explained that to CrossFit. They've been very healthy conversation wise regarding that. Obviously they have bigger problems right now. But we've even had conversations about hosting a Grid League match at, you know, a major CrossFit event, whether it be a semifinal or the games. And that was going to be a topic of discussion heading into this year. Doesn't look like it's going to be now, but I think that's the way it always should have been. Now, you listen to people that, you know, have been around through the whole thing. They still have this kind of like subconscious resistance to the concept of grid. And there are other reasons than the fact that, you know, CrossFit HQ resisted Grid League. But I think even the reasons that have nothing to do with it, a lot of which are, you know, still kind of associated in some ways. So like the biggest example is people assume that Grid League is dangerous because you see backward rolls, you see back uprise, you see higher, more complex elements performed by the athletes. And you're like, well, if CrossFit's dangerous, then Grid League must be really dangerous because they're that much more difficult, that much more crazy to do. And, you know, the main difference is CrossFit is a training methodology. It's a lifestyle. It's selling to the masses as this is good for you to do. Whereas Grid League is not. Grid League is essentially like, you know, the NFL. Like, the average person shouldn't go out on an NFL field and, you know, line up against linebackers and take a hit. And same thing with Grid League. Like, if you got at the top of the rings and said, I'm going to do a butterfly muscle up, and having never done a muscle up before, you're not going to attempt it. Like, it's way out of the realm of anybody that, you know, is just average on the street. But separating the two is not easy for to do, you know, CrossFitters to do, because they're like, oh, it should be functional. It should have a purpose in training. Our elements are not designed for that whatsoever. And so that kind of like conflict there also creates some resistance to Grid League a little bit. But again, I think the core, the basis of that is just remnants left over from past, you know, experiences.
Well said. That makes sense. It is a sport in and of itself unique, and it is, you know, not to make comparison, but you know, I have quite a few of our members that love to do Spartan races. They love to do high rocks.
Yeah,
they're doing DECA races. I have marathoners. I have people that do, you know, the mountain bike racing. Those are the ones that are getting injured. Actually, the ones that are getting injured are the two most recent injuries in my gym. They're the most debilitating injuries we've had in our gym recently, were pickleball.
Yeah.
Yeah, and fantasy or flag football. I remember when I played flag football, like I would have people limping off the field every freaking week, and we'd always be finding replacements. Like flag football was the most detrimental injury sport
ever. I think the fear is CrossFit is because there's so many CrossFitters, and because some of the movements are also movements that are found in CrossFit that people may too closely correlate them. But I disagree completely, and I love the elements. Here's what I love and why I think it's and I will tell you right now, CrossFit is CrossFit the sport and CrossFit the games is a test of fitness. Mm-hmm. Who is the fittest on earth?
Yep.
But on the team side of it, I love GRID much more than the team side of CrossFit. CrossFit puts it as they want to find the weak link in your team through tests of fitness, which they all participate. GRID is a strategy. How do I best use what tools I have in my fitness tools I have in my toolbox? The gymnastics person, the person that can do the heavy lift, the girl that can do that just ripping fast handstand walks. Courtney Walker. Sorry, Courtney Cox. I'm friends. Courtney Walker. Courtney Walker on the part, which is like, how can we use those people effectively and mid race, like substitute them in and out to execute the workload that needs to be done?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot more strategy involved, and it has made, and they're just so incredibly fun to watch. It keeps you engaged. And I will argue for it, for a CrossFit's benefit. You watch one of those things and you leave there going, I want to go work out.
Like 100%.
It is so inspiring to see.
It'll get you amped.
Oh yeah, to see Sam Dancer come down to the fourth quadrant and hit that clean the hang squat clean or something. It's just like, holy crap.
Or the other one was the burpee to the ring.
Oh,
like that was a deal breaker for some matches.
All right, sorry, I didn't want to go off on these tangents, but the one event that we had that was surprisingly good. There's actually two that I'll tell you that I'll think are surprising. You and Matt, you tell me if you got some.
I got some with you too, Craig.
Okay, good. All right. So one of them that Jamie just mentioned. Tell us about the burpee to the ring.
It was a burpee to a 10-foot ring.
Yes.
Yep. So you basically had to do a burpee and jump up and hit the 10-foot ring, but you needed to have somebody tall enough that had enough hops to get it.
Yep.
Unfortunately, San Francisco Fire did not have a very tall person. So Buddy Hitchcock was that guy.
Yeah.
He was so explosive, but it was so fun to watch him go up against like
the really tall athlete.
The really tall guys and still like come out on top.
And again,
because it's maybe a bad touch and the ring's now swinging.
And what's cool is as an athlete or as a fan, you can see the ring getting touched. Like, you know, when it's going to touch, but also you got the score thing going,
which shows
and
if you're up ahead.
And there was times when athletes would miss multiple times in a row and the other team would catch up. Oh, jumping to a ring became like a crowd cheering moment. It was really incredible. And the other one that really surprised me was the 14-foot or 15-foot wall balls.
15-foot wall balls.
Yeah, we did 15-foot wall balls.
I like that one. That was fun.
And it was to a target that was kind of out and set away. It wasn't against the wall. So it was like an independent try. And watching people try to do the 15-foot
when the air balls.
When you have trained for years and years doing 10-foot wall balls and all of a sudden you got to do a 15-foot wall ball. Holy crap. That was another cool one. That was just like, what?
Yeah, the burpee to ring touch is an essential classic element of
GRID. That's cool.
And it still happens. We had a championship decided.
No.
On a burpee to ring touch.
No.
In 2022. The sprint, it came down to the sprint relay.
Oh my God.
Teams were neck and neck going into the burpee to ring touch. And
one
team missed it twice and that was it.
That poor athlete. That poor athlete.
It was rough. But dude, I mean, like that is the sport. Like that is
let me tell you what, if anyone's watching, there were tears. Like there are really emotional moments on TV.
I have never seen a sport that draws emotion like
this. It is
insane.
Yeah.
Like good emotion and bad.
And immediately too, because the race is so fast.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's honestly the hardest part about being the league and being the organizer. I much prefer owning a team, but like the amount of emotion that comes out from just being involved with this sport is like, sometimes it's unmanageable for people. Like they cannot handle the emotion that comes from it.
Yeah. I remember that. I'm nervous to get, you know, when you think about that, by the way, just going back to that burpee ring, we said a championship. Was
championship
two missed ring touches. That's like a 25 yard field goal in the Super Bowl that a kicker has done repeatedly multiple times.
Perfect analogy.
And misses that kick.
Yeah.
So it was crazy.
I guarantee you that athlete is still living with those two missed ring touches right now.
He doesn't play anymore, unfortunately, because I think it was that hard on him.
Yeah. But
the crazy thing was like he was one of the better at the league. In the league at it, he came and he jumped down to touch his chest too far away from the ring. So when he jumped up to go touch it,
he was out of place,
just out of reach of it. Just out of reach of it. And that was like the only mistake that he made. But then of course, like he missed the first one, so it got in his head and then it was just
Mather.
Rough.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys, anyone that listens or listens to this later on, because there's a lot of people who are going to replay this. I have PTSD a little bit right now listening to this, because it's just like, James,
we've had a couple of those. We've had a match like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's like you're as a fan or someone that's on the team, the emotions are so freaking high. You're like, we got this. We've got the best ring toucher in the league. Mm-hmm. And then that individual goes out there, they're nervous and they end up coming down. They go a little bit faster than they probably should go. The crowd's yelling, the crowd gets loud in that fourth quadrant.
Oh man.
In those kinds of moments, the electricity and the emotion that's being poured out of the room is like unmatched. It feels like a stadium full of people in like a small area, just like completely into it, freaking the hell out all at the same time.
It's like if you could capture that energy and share that energy, that would change people's perception on what this sport is essentially could be about.
100%.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm just saying. Like, because remember, we had so many of those moments.
So this many times.
This is it. This is like, people need to see this.
Yes.
And I will argue again and again, like, especially where CrossFit is today with the sport. Mm-hmm. You want to get people excited again about sport. Look, and the fittest on earth, that's great. That's the place where you test the fittest on earth. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. But man, you want people to get excited about human performance. And watching human performance, you know, at its finest in direct head-to-head competition, oftentimes men versus women.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've really leaned into that. That's one of the things that I have, and Ruby, my partner, we've differed on with Tony a little bit on vision, I think, mm-hmm. is how important that is.
Yeah.
And he always said it was important, but I really believe that's
it's become more important.
Because I think that's the direction of society. Because women's sports are getting more and more popular.
Yes.
And, you know, there's definitely been kind of like a far too, on the men's side of popularity, and it's going to swing the other way.
Yes.
And what's better than a single gender sport is putting them together. Mm-hmm. And it just makes so much sense in a lot of ways. The only thing it doesn't make sense is how we've always done things. And that's not necessarily a good reason. So that's one thing we really leaned into. We create these opportunities for men to compete directly with and against one another. And of course, some of those are the most viral clips that we get on social media, because it is so different.
And that those are like primarily like what you did different with the mirror races is making that essentially the men and women competing with each other, just changing and maybe the load on the bar or the movement on the bar because of the load.
Yeah. So the Echo is one good example, but another really important one, there's actually two. Mm. One is in the Ringer Point race that I mentioned earlier, there's a male and a female version. Mm. So a lot of times it's the same. So if it's a bodyweight element, it'll be the same exact same race, but if it's a barbell element, there'll be two separate weights. And we just over time understand what weights create the closest outcomes amongst the top performers and assign the different weights. But a team can choose either. So they pick either a male or female that they think is going to give them the best chance to win. So we have men versus women in those Ringer Points all the time.
That's cool.
Man.
And then, the other one, Craig, you love this one.
Yes.
So one of the other icons of the sport you mentioned earlier is Taylor Sollings.
Yes.
Yes. And she plays now. And
by the way, I see, and that makes me so, when I see like Erica Dona and Taylor Sollings, it makes me so happy because these guys were just, by the way, and so Taylor was the strong woman on the DC Brawlers. Mm-hmm. And
the closer.
And I love and hate her. Because so true. You knew if there's going to be a heavy lift at the end, like you're just going to get, we're going to get
not even a heavy lift. It could be a moderate barbell. And she's just
so fast and so strong.
Yeah.
And she was an icon in the league. She was just like, she was, did she get league MVP?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And now
she's got to let me tell this story about her.
Sorry. I built it up a little bit for you.
Yeah, no, this is great. So one of the things that we did to create this opportunity for men and women to compete directly with one another is the last element in the sprint relay. Mm-hmm. We made it so that it was a version that a really strong female could perform and give a team a benefit if that's the case in the design of the rest of the elements. And so you're incentivized as a team to have a female do it if you have somebody that can. Mm. Not every team does.
Right.
And so you end up with circumstances where a male will go against a female. So last year we had Taylor Sollings on the Aces versus the Lions, who are the most winningest team in the league. It came down to a gridlock with that version of sprint relay. It was Taylor Sollings versus a guy. They ran down the grid. He was slightly behind her. She did it as fast as him. It was two clean and jerks, so 205 pounds. She did it as fast as him, ran back, and won the entire match on that element, beating him at the same element. Now, of course, he was a little bit behind, but I mean, you can imagine how hype that was.
Held off, yeah.
And is the weight the same for him as her?
Yeah, it was the same weight.
That's amazing. Oh, my God. Such a beast.
Yeah.
She goddamn her.
But that makes it so fun to watch.
Oh
though.
My God, it's so fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
And that was like one of those iconic moments that will go down in the history. Because it was first of all, like, we've only had a few gridlocks. And to have a gridlock finish in that way was just so amazing.
That's so cool.
It's, you know, in a podcast like this, it's hard to get people excited. I can't encourage you enough. Well, let me ask you this. So to watch it, if you can go to it, I want to talk to you. Do you still have time here?
Because
I want to talk to you about what your season looks like, how we can watch your season. And then what I also want to talk about, is there a way that athletes can participate? And then the last thing is what are your thoughts on expansion of the league?
Yeah. So, we live stream all of our matches on YouTube. That's one way to watch.
Mm-hmm. When is your season?
So we just finished our regular season and our playoff and championship is November 16th.
Okay.
So you can watch live stream then. And I got to throw in there that, you know, we had a Hurricane Milton during our last event and it really screwed up, the last, you know, event at Mr. Olympia. So we're having two makeup matches for teams that couldn't make it to the event prior to the playoffs and championship at that event. So it's going to be a crazy event to see a lot more action than you would typically.
Yeah.
So watching that live on YouTube is going to be the best way to kind of keep up with it. As Craig said earlier, there is no replacement for being at a match. And that's true of a lot of sports, but that for sure. And you know, when it comes to growing the league, there's been a couple of different thought processes about how to best do it for Grid League. Initially, when we started the Florida Grid League, we were thinking that participation was going to be it. So just like soccer, who invested in a participation early on, developed in the play fandom, we started a kids Grid League. It did really well, created a lot of passion. We have kids that still come to matches. We have kids that grew up to play in the league now that are performers in the league. And so it worked. However, the time, effort, organization, manpower it took didn't equate to, you know, what needed to happen for it to be sustainable. And what we found was more sustainable and also, kind of scaled better was the media. So like short form, showing the athleticism of them, mm-hmm. those going viral, getting interest, and then directing them to the live stream is how we've been able to grow with largely unknown players. Like, we've had a couple of players that have gone to the games. I think only one or two have gone individually, but you know, when you come to a match or when you participate, it's a much deeper connection that you develop with the sport. So we're trying to create opportunities for people to play, and we have a new plan to roll that out this year to kind of really lower the barrier of entry to be able to play, so it can be in gym based. And I feel like that'll hopefully help get people to understand the sport more. But also another big initiative is to create more, I guess, fandom to the players directly. Because I think the big barrier now that, you know, we've proven the sport is engaging, we've had, you know, we get hundreds of thousands of views on our live streams on YouTube, which is great. But getting that hardcore fandom that will travel to come to an event, will, you know, spend money on the swag for the team, and will follow really closely is kind of the next stage of things. It's kind of like that area of where soccer was before the, you know, young soccer players grew up, or where UFC was before Dana White took over. We've proven we have a product. It's just a matter of developing the real deep fandom that creates to like following deeply all season long. So there's a lot of different ways that we think we can work on developing that. But one of them is to get into more regions and have more teams, because that, you know, creates more reasons to follow and more reasons to feel that tension and competitiveness with other teams. And so, you know, given the fact that most of the teams are in Florida now, that reduces the regional impact significantly. And so we're adding two teams before the 2025 season.
Oh, okay.
We've just announced our first, which is Houston, Texas. And that's going to spread out the regionality of it a little bit and, you know, hopefully help support people being vested in the single team's performance throughout the season. And so we're in talks with a few other people about the potential second team. In Northern California is a really great place for it. So
here we go. That seed.
But so like currently the main strategies are adding teams, and I think our goal is to add two every year. At least for the foreseeable future, we'll slow it down if we need to. There are challenges every time you add a team as far as logistics and communication and all of those things. But we're adding two for the 2025 season. Our goal is to add two more for the 2026 season and kind of continue to grow it that way. One of our objectives all along has been to grow at a sustainable pace. So not get out of in front of our skis and, you know, do things, probably add a little bit less than we feel like we could, just so that we keep it manageable and keep it, you know, sustainable. So that's kind of like the general thought process. And then that additional opportunity for gyms to be able to play the sport in their own gym is something we're going to roll out in this off season. And I think has some potential, but it's one of those things that, you know, is going to take some testing and trial and error that, and take some time to develop too.
I think we'd like to be a part of that.
That'd be fun.
And Jamie and I have talked about that. Yeah. doing a grid match here. I want to give the athletes the exposure to it. But what I want to do is I really want to give my community, because I think our community would love to watch it.
Well, especially some of our community that's been around since National Pro Grid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They'd love to see it, and they'd love to see just even at a local gym event versus maybe another gym.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had gym versus gym matches, and the turnout, the emotion, the excitement, the investment in everybody from the gym in their own team. And the most valuable, I think, from a gym perspective is, you know, because teams have a wide range of ability on them, you have kind of your like fire breather athletes that have their roles, but then you also have more general athletes that, you know, are part of these teams that also contribute, and it connects the dots. So you break down cliques within gyms, you really build the community within gyms. And of course, that's really one of the big objectives as a gym owner is how do you build community within a gym? So the gym rallies around the team and, you know, gets excited for it. And it really is an awesome experience. And, you know, there's a ton of benefits and potential outside of just playing the sport.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. A lot of our members would come to the fire matches. Oh, yeah. Our members were all of our volunteers that did all the work, rolling out the barbells.
It's true.
Traveling with the team, the whole nine yards. Yeah. It was awesome, and there was never any. Well, this isn't CrossFit. Like we never had ever any of that.
This is fun.
It was fun to be a part of. And that's one thing I'd really like to. And I'm gonna take this opportunity to talk to CrossFit about it. Because I do have access to be able to do that is to make them understand just how fun and engaging it was for the community. Mm-hmm. And I didn't worry about anyone creating any confusion about what CrossFit is versus what Grit is. Like our customers knew, people that do CrossFit know the difference, mm-hmm. and they know what one is versus the other is. And there's it was never a threat to the open, the semifinals, or any of that. It just, matter of fact, it kept, and I'm looking at your season. If you're in November, you're in the off season. Yeah. What a great way to keep people engaged in sport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For what we do,
since there's not a whole lot.
No. Yeah,
if Hyrox can be in existence and represent what CrossFit or Olympic weightlifting existed way before CrossFit did. Yeah. Of course, they had all these, issues with CrossFit initially, but then of course embraced it because CrossFit blew Olympic weightlifting up.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's so many correlations that make sense. And let's
look at a Hyrox wall ball versus a Grid League wall ball.
Right.
Right there. Hey, let's look at the average depth of the athlete. First of all, the Grid League athlete is going to beat them. And
we had the clicker at the target before they did, too.
Yeah, we did. And Grid League's got professional referees.
Yeah.
Yep.
Professional referees.
Yeah.
And there's some stuff that looks crazy. The burpee backflips, like that looks crazy, but man, it just is a real measure of the explosiveness, the coordination, the agility.
You also mentioned, the officials, right? The judges, like we had professional judges. Yes. Imagine we had CrossFit judges as a profession where they have now stuff to do year round.
Yeah.
If it was the games to then Grid. So then they can keep their skills sharp. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I mean, I will say
that
the judging or refereeing for a Grid League is way different than
CrossFit. Oh, it's so different.
But at least you have the advantage of knowing what a squat is and what to look for.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, that's cool. Well, we're
gonna go pull out the grid mat we have upstairs.
I was digging out. Jared. Yeah, Jamie and I were preparing for this, and we're just like, I just got nostalgia up to stuff, looking at the old videos.
I pulled out the combine sweatshirt.
Combine sweatshirt. I went and dug up this Fire T-shirt. As I told these guys beforehand, this is my $400,000 T-shirt and my $250,000 hat. but it makes me feel good that this is, like, I see your stuff and I'm so grateful to you and your sister for what you've done in keeping this going, because it was so freaking amazing. I have, when I say a PTSD, but it's like PTSD in a really, really positive way. Mm-hmm. Emotional.
You can't have something meaningful that's not difficult. What makes it meaningful.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I want to reflect that appreciation back to you, because you've been one of the ones that has always, touched base and said, hey, you guys are doing a great job. Saw this. And so those kinds of things are so important to us, and we really appreciate it. And I know Ruby wished she could be a part of it and says hi. Mm-hmm. The one thing I wanted to mention.
Yes, so please.
This is a defining moment in the sport for me, and you were there, Craig, and I wanted to touch on this story. It was the Vegas, and it made me think about it because we went back to Vegas. It was the Vegas Combine where they had the super teams that kind of was it North versus South or East versus West or something.
Yes.
And I was sitting next to you watching that match, and it was one of those matches that came down to the sprint relay, came down to the last element, and we're going nuts in the stands and everything, and just the commentary from you after that was like, that was the best sporting experience I've ever had in my life. You said that to me.
Yeah.
That became our mission. is the best sporting experience on the planet. And so, you know, that like that moment is one that I'll always remember because it left an imprint on like the mechanics of the sport working really well and better than we ever envisioned.
Yeah.
And the mechanics is only one part of it, but it's an important part. And that was like, that was one of the moments that defined it that I'll always remember for me as like, oh, this is something that can be really important in the world.
That's fantastic. Awesome. I think it represents an opportunity to get more people engaged in movement.
100%. That's a huge part of our values. There's so many reasons to sit on the couch now, especially with like, you know, video games and things and you know, artificial intelligence doing a lot of the stuff for us. The more reasons we can have to exhibit what our bodies can do, the better. And
and it's so scalable to every level too.
Absolutely. And there's somebody for everybody on a grid league team. So everybody has somebody to look up to that has characteristics that remind them of themselves. It could be a big giant weightlifter. It could be a tiny little gymnast and everywhere in between. And that is missing in sports, but it's also so important about sports. And what makes it so inspiring, like you said, Craig, it makes you want to go work out because you see somebody that looks a little bit like you or has characteristics like you doing something incredibly amazing. And it just makes you want to, you know, go out there and do something too.
That's so well said. Again, just like all of this stuff is just great. I'm highly inspired to be a pain in the ass to CrossFit. I mean, and I, you know, I've the one beauty of being like 61 years old is I kind of don't give a fuck. And two, I've been doing this Diablo thing for 18 years now, and been a part of every level of CrossFit from the sport to this, to be able to have some influence, have a voice until they tell me to shut the fuck up or go away. And so I'm gonna leverage that opportunity to help draw some attention to you guys and what you're doing in the sport, because I think it will completely engage our community. And you remember too, people would come, skepticals. I remember the Haas Pavilion, and people were just like, I'm gonna go see what this is all about. Mm-hmm. And then they would, and then after we're like, that was unbelievable. Yeah. You know,
adrenaline flying.
And like, all you had to do is, I knew, I was like, I'd get them in and get them in one match. Yeah. Go see one match. You even see like one race in one match and you get them.
Yeah.
And they get it. And they don't think, oh, this is going to replace CrossFit. No.
Absolutely. No, they coexist very well together.
Very well.
Yeah.
And I feel like they support one another.
100%. Yeah. Well, so, and just, I guess this would be a great kind of closing conversation, and kind of what prompted this, this podcast as well, is we saw a little bit of grid overlap. We've seen in the past. We used to see hints of it at the games, the ladders at the games, those kinds of things that would show up after. We're like, they're copying us. But at Wadapalooza,
Miami, and SoCal.
Yeah. SoCal. Yeah.
There was a lot of similarities there.
A lot of similarities.
For sure. I mean, there was clear inspiration, which I find flattering. And I think it's great. And, you know, the Ringer point that I described was they had an exact format like that. They had the triad, you know, three and three going out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's awesome. I mean, you know, we actually got a lot of attention from that because people debated, you know, was it taken from, was it appreciated, was it, you know, and then of course we had the opportunity to talk a little bit about what makes grid even better, because honestly it was well received. A lot of people, I saw a lot of great comments about it, and people said it was fun to watch.
They did.
And grid, from a spectator perspective purely, if you're not talking about defining who's the fittest, is better. It's hard to argue that it's not. The only thing that we didn't have that Wadapalooza had is the best crossers in the world being a part of it. And that's the main difference.
Yep. Let me just say this, because I've been to every single CrossFit Games. Maybe just one I haven't been to, but I think at every single CrossFit Games, and especially in the last 5 years, because Diablo hasn't had a team there. But I would go, you'd go and you'd watch individual athletes and you watch the teams. The stadium would empty out, except for family and friends that would watch the heat of their team. They even wouldn't watch the others. And the events were, and they did what they, you know, again, they were testing the fitness of the teams.
Yeah.
But there was like no rivalry, no like just passion, excitement, no like, oh my God, they're going to pass them. Like there was very, very little of that because it was a different type of event. And I really think the team competition as it stands today is a bit of a disservice to the sport because it's not engaging the fans. And it may be, I know it's a blast for the athletes and it's a big accomplishment to make it to the, it's a huge accomplishment to be there, especially given the level of competition today in CrossFit. But it's not helping the sport because it's not pulling in eyeballs. It's not getting people engaged. And the teams that are there, a lot of them are pro teams, meaning they come from different gyms. So the affiliates aren't engaged in it. And we know that there's an issue there with affiliates that are like, you know, it's not even affiliate teams. These are just, you know, these are pro teams.
Right.
And then also no one is inspired to want to participate do it. And here's an opportunity maybe to pull in or partner with and I've always said this, CrossFit should just be a sponsor of the Grid League. Hey, we're gonna give these guys funds to let them develop this sport because we want to promote CrossFit to all of these people that are watching this.
It's another reason to CrossFit.
It's another reason to CrossFit.
Yeah.
And celebrate that sport and maybe be an exhibition at the CrossFit Games.
I think it makes so much sense. It's not like there's any direct competition whatsoever. It brings another reason to pay attention, and it widens the range of athlete types that are benefiting from CrossFit. So you have your big giant weightlifters, you have your small little gymnasts, and everyone in between that have some connection back to CrossFit, and it just widens the range of opportunity to bring more attention to what CrossFit is.
When I was down at the Wodapalooza in Miami, I went for the first time ever this year. And I thought, man, what a great opportunity. Like it's a fitness festival. Really cool. There was the CrossFit event going on at the same time. I'm thinking, man, HYROX could run an event here at Wodapalooza. What a great way to bring in that crowd.
Now, I wonder if Grid could do that.
Well, and Grid could do that, right?
Less footprint too.
Right. And less footprint. But why not? We have this. We have 60% of the population that is morbidly obese right now. Yeah. Why not make all of this like the way to get people in and start moving in a really cool way?
Yeah. Anytime we can celebrate athleticism, you know, developing physical ability, I think it doesn't matter what form that takes. It's a positive thing for society.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And if you want to test your fitness overall and find out if you're the fittest in the world, do CrossFit, the sport.
That's right.
Yep. Right.
And if you have a specialty or if you have certain elements that you're really good at, you still have an opportunity to compete at a really high level.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir. Because there are those athletes.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yep. Right on. Dude, this was a great conversation. Yeah. We got a lot of
fun. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Please say hello to Ruby. We won't snub her next time. We'll bring her on. She's even better.
I agree.
And it'd be fun to say hello to her too. But
we're gonna go dust off the mats.
This is not the end of this conversation.
No, please. Anytime you guys want to talk about something, let me know. I love these conversations, and you're gonna be one of the first people we talk to about this in gym thing that we're gonna be working on in the off season.
It's awesome. Good. I'm gonna help you promote November 16th too. I'm doing an event here at Diablo with all of the affiliates. I got a bunch of affiliates coming in for a gathering here at Diablo on November 16th. So I may not be able to tune in live depending upon the hours, but I am going to promote it heavily to everybody that comes to it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that. Really appreciate it. And thank you guys for having me on. This was awesome.
Cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it, man.
Yeah. Thank you.
It'll be available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts probably at the end of the day.
Okay. Sweet. We will be promoting it for sure.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you guys. It was a blast.
Man, that was good, dude. Thank you. Really good. I'm just like, it's so much. I'm looking at it before we had notes up there and I'm like, fuck the notes. Oh, that poor athlete. I'm going to be thinking about the two ring touches all day today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just know that poor feet, that poor, yeah, man, what an awesome accomplishment though. And you know, and that's something that athlete too will look back upon, and you know, yeah, when he's a little older, and he'll go, oh, that was still awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was, you know,
I really
100%. You have, you know, even the failure in and of itself is like a life lesson for him, that is a positive one. You know, it's just, yeah, it created a moment that everybody will remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But man, there's just all of that quadrant four stuff is so exciting. You're doing an amazing job, and I commend you guys for, with all of the crap that we went through, dude.
Thank you, man. Yeah.
Like, it was like back to back to back to back to back hurricanes. Yeah. Maybe that's what conditioned you for being able to do
it. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and still been... doing it and still building your house on the coast. That's awesome. Like, grid league, man.
Yeah, it definitely helped teach us how to battle through adversity. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
It's, and I'm proud of you, and thank you because you're onto something here, and I encourage you to keep it going, and we will do our best to promote it. And I mean it. I'm going to talk to the CEO about it.
Okay.
They are right now in the midst of, between you and I,
between you and I and everybody else.
Well, no, we're not live, right?
We are live.
Oh, we are?
We never say goodbye.
Oh, dude. God. Thanks for being on.
We'll come back in a second.
Yeah. Thank you for being on.
Thank you, guys.